for November 13th, 2006. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, it's Jeff Robbins sitting in the corner of a Starbucks in Los Angeles, California. This is episode 27 of the Lullabot Podcast. Today we've got an interview with the guys from IBM who've been writing these really great articles on Drupal up on the DeveloperWorks website. We've got a link to that from this podcast page if you want to go check out those articles. Lullabot has workshops coming up in January. You should go to lullabot.com/training and read up about those. It's going to be a good time. Providence, Rhode Island. Easy to get to from just about everywhere. So check that out. And here's the interview with IBM. I'm here with the team from IBM, who's been writing all these great articles on Drupal, on the IBM DeveloperWorks website. And we wanted to find out a little bit more about who these people are and why they're writing all this stuff. So why don't we start by having you guys introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Louis Weitzman, and I've been with IBM about 10 years. I got a degree in architecture and ended up going to school to combine sort of design and computing and in the intersection of those two things.
My name's Alistair Lewis-Bowen. I guess we're doing a history thing. I came over from IBM UK to do sports events for IBM, doing the websites for sports events. Been working on all sorts of things involving web since then. I guess what you call a webmaster for IBM Com for a while, and now working here doing semantic web stuff.
My name is Stephen Evanchik. I'm actually the youngin here, having only been with IBM, I think, 4 years now. I came out of graduate school, and my background is actually not in website development, believe it or not. So those of you who have a ThinkPad. I actually wrote the TrackPoint driver extensions for the Linux kernel, so that's my claim to fame. I'm not really a web guy; just got roped into this.
So what does your team do here at IBM?
That's a good question.
Well, it's changed over time. I mean, we were involved initially as what's the popular term, a skunkworks group that would set up websites for sports events. Specifically, we were doing the Atlanta Olympics originally, and then we got pulled into the tennis events and golf events. But the point was that we were setting up websites for all these things, and it was seen, I suppose, at the time as being fairly bleeding edge, and that sort of set up the mission for our group. We were doing all sorts of prototype things, reference implementations and stuff, and it usually involved the internet and web in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, and just so you know, this is mid-90s kind of stuff, so this team's been around for quite some time in one form or another, right now we're kind of skunkworks in the semantic web / web 2.0 area and where that intersects, and we're working on stuff with biologists and cancer researchers to try and find out how we can make solving and curing cancer and these hard problems a bit easier on the researchers. So that's kind of where we are today. So this Drupal stuff has actually been a side project for us that, as so many interesting things kind of end up being, our boss came to us and said, we need a website where we can collaborate with customers and other people inside of IBM, and that's how all this started. Who knows how it'll end?
So you guys just sort of do what needs to be done, and particularly website kind of stuff. Is that?
Well, it's really it's I guess it's just purely internet based. I mean, having a website is just a convenient platform on which to put the things that we need to put, you know. And as far as the things that we do, we generally usually pick ourselves, I guess, and then convince IBM that it's worth doing. but one of the missions of the group was really turned into this idea that, you know, by doing that, we can influence the way IBM adopts technologies, and we can push those sort of things to our external customers.
Yeah, we're always interested in kind of the up and coming new stuff that's not something that IBM will pick up and run with tomorrow or even next year, but a couple of years down the road. You know, we think we're interested in those kinds of technologies, which really kind of set the longer term agenda for IBM, and we try and, like Alistair said, convince people inside of IBM that this is the next big thing, or this is going to be really important a couple of years from now.
So a lot of the stuff, a lot of these articles that you're writing up are externalized internal work. I mean, this is stuff that you've done, you've written up for use in IBM that you think people would also benefit from being able to read.
Well, I think it's really. So we did this project for a real Drupal project, uh-huh. which was for at least within IBM, a pretty high profile site, and we thought that, I mean, at some level we knew we wanted to give something back to the Drupal community. So one of the ways we thought we could do that was to just write something pretty honest about the end to end decisions and development path we took. And, you know, we were pretty honest in the first article about which content management system we wanted to use, and compared that with, like, you know, one of the framework and some of the popular blog engines and stuff like that. But it just so happened that Drupal was the thing we chose, and it just went from there, really. You know, we wanted to show how it didn't start off being such a Drupal type thing. It was just, you know, this is our design process, this is how we approach this is how we started developing our modules. Yes, we did, you know, mess around in Drupal core to start off with. Uh-huh. No, that's not the right thing to do, but you know these are all the things we at least try and show, you know, this is a normal thing.
Yeah, it's part of the learning process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's really where it came from, and it just so happens that, you know, developer works is not really an IBM internal thing. It's just an external presence that IBM set up for really anyone to write on. It's not just IBMers, and it seemed the perfect place to put it because it was easy for us to just put it there. We had, you know, connections with developer works from previous stuff that we've done, so. We just put it up there.
Yeah. So how's the response been?
Unbelievable, actually. Within the first 2 weeks, we had something like 30,000 hits on our first two articles. Actually, I think it was less than 2 weeks. It's like 10 days. 10 days, you know, 30,000 people read our first two articles, and we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments, which is just unheard of in the developer works area. And in the month of October, we had 48,000 hits on our articles, most of which I think were clustered around Article 5, which was the Drupal module, how to build the Drupal module, and then its companion article, I think follow up Article 6 was also another hit. So we're averaging close to 30,000 hits a month, which is just unbelievable.
Wow. And how many articles are up there now?
There's 9 up there now, and we have planned for a total of 14. A couple are actually at the editors now, and will probably be published by the end of the year, and then we'll have a couple sort of finishing up articles and then one summary article.
Cool. So let's talk about the articles. We can go through them quickly and sort of give a brief summary overview of each one, I guess. Do we have a list here?
Yeah.
So the first one was an introduction. I think that got people really sort of excited about.
Depends on who you are.
I guess so. But it was talking about your process of choosing Drupal, correct? And it had been a thing that in the Drupal community hadn't really been verbalized very well, and especially to have it come out through IBM is sort of obviously, you know, a big company that's thinking about these kind of things, to see your process of experimenting with the different content management systems and why you chose Drupal was something that I think a lot of the Drupal community was excited to see, just because it sort of verbalized a lot of the process that we'd all gone through to in choosing Drupal.
Right. I think there's one bit of clarification, and that is we're just three guys within IBM. We are not equal to IBM.
Yeah, but we choose to spin it
anywhere you want. But yeah,
but it, one of the things that happened with these articles is amazing how many IBMers came out of the woodwork after these had gone up.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I think there's a lot of companies out there that have a lot of different departments that have sort of been experimenting with it. Usually it's for like an intranet kind of a thing, because it's really good for community posting and stuff like that. So, you know, one department will stand up and go like, well, we're using this thing called Drupal. And then four other departments will go, oh, yeah, well, we're using that too, you know. This happens a lot. We've done some consulting gigs where we go out there to meet with one person and like four other people come out of the woodwork to say, like, hey, like, can we get in on that? That'd be great.
That's precisely how it's been here. And I don't think we've had any sort of negative response within the company as well. And the site that we did that was internal to the company has been a smashing success. I mean, people are using it day to day to solve real problems and communicate in a more effective and efficient manner compared to where they were when we started this in 2005, summer 2005.
Cool. Well, let's continue through the list. The second one is designed for an effective user experience, which isn't so much Drupal specific as just sort of generally looking at
our design process. And I think part of the reason, like Stephen said, is that the new site that we've deployed is such a success is that we actually started back at the beginning and looked at who the users were and tried to understand what they needed from the site. And from that, you know, a reasonable design emerged, and then we were able to implement it in Drupal.
And I find, I mean, that tends to be when sites are the most of a success, is when you're not starting with, okay, we've got this palette provided by Drupal, now what can we do with it? Instead, you just start with the sky and say, what do we want to do, and look at all the possibilities, and then figure out how to make Drupal do it. Because
I think that really pushed us in the direction of getting into module development as early as possible, because we knew that, we weren't particularly familiar with all the modules, and I don't think many people are when they initially get into Drupal.
Well, there's so many of them.
So you kind of,
there's like 400 contributed modules just for 4.7 alone. Right?
And even then, sort of filtering through the ones that you know, that actually really attack your problem or are good at doing it. So we, you know, I think for us at least, we jumped straight in there and into core, and we're really sort of messing around. But I mean, I think we've said, I'm not sure if you said this in the articles, but we've said it at least between ourselves, you know, one of the flexibilities of Drupal is the fact that you can do that. You can get something up pretty, pretty quickly, even if it's not the right way. But but that's the power of, you know, we've been using it in other projects, and this is at least for us, it's provided a very convenient framework on which we can set up a reference implementation, some sort of prototype where we need some sort of web base quickly.
Yeah. One of the great things about Drupal is that we've been going through and as we're learning, you know, one of us learns some component or some interesting facet of Drupal, and we're able to explain how it works and where you would like to use it in a simple manner. Right? There's not a lot of complexity in Drupal, even though you can do very complex things with it. It's very, I guess, easy to explain how something works to another developer, and that's part of the reason, I think, why we enjoy writing about Drupal is because it's easy to talk about, and now we just need to put that down on paper.
Yeah, and I think that having so many possibilities oftentimes actually makes the process a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
If you give someone a pencil and say, here, do it. You know, it's like they could write a book or they could draw a picture or they could, you know, and so it's sort of with a lot of the blogging tools out there, you set it up and it's for writing a blog and you can get going really fast with that. And that's a good feeling. And Drupal kind of launches you out of the box really quickly. But then sort of where you go from there is a lot of times where people get sort of stuck. They just sort of end up with a blog site. And again, right. It's that process of really...
And I think, sorry to diverge from the list, but I think one of the other things is that, and I've seen this on the forums too, is that, and no disrespect, but there seems to be, it's very hard to find things in the handbook, I feel. And having... folks like yourselves at Lullabot, and I think there's another site doing like video tutorials and things like that, really helps pull together some of these things. And we figured that maybe by writing this stuff, we could pull together the stuff that we found within the handbook, so that at least there's some sort of semblance of a flow whereby it gets you to a point where you can start diving off.
Well, it is sort of the inherent difficulty of a community-written handbook.
Yeah.
It's a lot of voices. All sort of saying the same thing, but maybe in different ways and stuff like that. And there really is something to the process of having a consistent voice and an editor, and that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah. One of the kind of getting back to Article 2, one of the interesting things about that is that's really a summary of a larger, much larger document that Alistair and Louis put together. And one of the interesting things that the article and the document that they put together really constrained us and narrow down the choices of how we would actually implement a feature of the site in code. So the site that we wrote and deployed inside of IBM has this notion of a conference setting. And, you've all been to web conferences or whatever, and you have tracks and so on and so forth. But, without the good design doc that we had that was created before, the code would have been all over the place. And it really helped focus us to the task of making a better user experience and helping the operations staff who actually maintain the content of the site as well as the users. So
it's about getting from point A to point B. You need to know where point B is.
Yeah.
And you have different users along the way. I mean, like Stephen was saying, we have the administrators as well as the end users who are coming to the site. So we have to take them.
Yeah. Well, let's continue on.
So three and four were the installation configuration for Windows and Linux.
Uh-huh.
And that was, I don't know what to say about that. But
yeah, well, they're kind of boring, right? But they're necessary.
Exactly. So,
but less opinion-based, more informational.
Yeah, and really long. I think they're like something like 60 pages with all the screenshots and stuff.
Wow. How did you find Drupal running on Windows as compared to running on Linux, which tends to be sort of the more popular?
Well, from my perspective, I was able to get work done and be very productive. But Windows isn't my preferred platform, but I'm kind of forced to use it here. Not by any corporate decree, but just because I haven't had time to reinstall my laptop or whatever.
Right.
And I don't think we had too many problems, you guys.
Well, I think as a development environment, it seemed fine. I mean, there's a few quirks, I guess, but the dependence on
so were you running Windows with IIS?
No.
Oh, so Windows with Apache.
It's a prime system.
Okay. Because that's particularly the murky area is the IIS stuff that's sort of supposed to kind of work if you get it kind of going, but...
No, we stayed away from IIS.
I don't know anybody that's really...
Well, we're not really familiar with that at all.
Yeah.
So,
and plus, we go through the articles, I think 12, which is yet unpublished, talks about deploying, and one of the things that we wanted to do was have a development environment that supported our final production deployment environment. So we didn't want to have IIS on our development machines and then migrate to Apache in the production environment.
Right,
I mean, that's just a whole bunch of debugging that we didn't want to have to worry about.
Exactly. Why? Why give yourself the grief?
Absolutely. I mean, we have time constraints all over the place.
So then we started in with Article 5 and 6 talking about a specific module that we wrote to help with this conference and this website, and that was the announcement module. That kind of was the simplest core piece that we could describe, yet had enough variations that could you know, stand through, you know, the test of time through the whole series of articles, and we could modify it or add to it. So that was our storyline, if you will, for the articles.
Cool. And so that article talks about just sort of the different Drupal hooks and sort of the process of writing a
Yeah, actually, I think it also talks about some of the mistakes that we made in writing a module, because
it's a good thing to talk about. People don't talk about that a lot.
Yeah, and you know, I think the announcement module that we talk about is, you know, version 5.0. So we've gone through many revisions of the announcement module and refinements and stuff. And you know, if you took a look at the code that we went to production with in March on the site and looked at the code that we wrote about, you'd be surprised, because it's like a whole different set of developers working on this stuff. So,
There was a lot of there's information out there and books out there about sort of the high level administration of Drupal and all that, and then there's the low level source code, right?
Right.
And sort of there's gap in between, and I think 3 starts to sort of transition between that high level stuff into the programmer's realm.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that thing. It's like you have the end users who are using Drupal and maybe want to configure it and sort of like the idea of being able to plug in all the modules and stuff like that. And then you have the developers who are like concerned with, you know, performance and deployment and you know, the different hooks and PHP options and different flavors of databases and all that kind of thing, and sort of the transition from one to the other and sort of the middle ground sometimes it really doesn't get covered.
Well, I think theming as well is obviously an area which people seem to get stuck with it.
Well, that definitely is that area, because it's the sort of area between the designer and the developer, which are sort of tend to be they don't tend to work in the same office usually, you know, and it's definitely an area where Lullabot has put a lot of focus with our workshops and stuff like that, so...
Yeah, I think Article 5, though, that's the general module one, where we just talk about the module system in kind of the abstract way, and then 6 really dives into the announcement and implementation.
Right. And then, exactly. And then we get into the structuring of the content in 7, and 8 is the theming of that structure.
Yeah, well, both of which articles that Alistair just wrote. An unbelievable amount of stuff that is just so valuable, and those I think are up-and-coming articles as people work through their sites. I think from the stats we're starting to see more people kind of move into Articles 7 and 8 and read those a bit more.
Yeah. Well, and even just that those are written as 2 separate articles is sort of the state of Web 2.0, isn't it? I mean, that you're really looking at the XHTML as one thing, and then the CSS as another thing. I mean, these are separate entities, each needing their own attention.
It builds on hopefully by now, the familiar ideas of semantic structure and so forth. Although actually, maybe it's not so familiar. But you know, at least within the industry, you know, like it seems like a lot more people are into the standards-based design.
Right.
You know, the whole Dan Cederholm type.
Right. And I guess, I mean, for people that are listening that aren't familiar with that, the whole idea of this semantic stuff is that the HTML itself is actually semantically correct, meaning that. The headlines use H H1 or H2 or H3 tags, and the body text uses, you know, paragraphs and all that kind of stuff, so that if you were to take out all of the design elements, and you can take out all of the design elements, it would still make sense. It would still be functionally and make sense. And the idea is that then you could present it differently, that a screen reader for the blind or I guess the deaf are all set pretty much. but these kind of other alternative ways of presenting it are still fully functional.
Right. We start. It's like anything. If you do a lot of the preparation, then the stuff you put on top is a lot easier.
Right.
Like, you know. I mean, you're right. You know, we actually mentioned, you know, obviously with this site, we're dealing with a lot of conference material, a lot of pre-read stuff, and we found a lot of the time people printed off, so that was a big deal for us. Having really nicely presented print media was very important, and of course once you've got a really beautifully semantically laid out structure for your content, it's a total breeze to
right.
make print media stuff. So.
Yeah, Alistair even went the extra mile and made sure that the site that we deployed could actually be used by kind of a screen reader or some, you know, and more accessible with some of his markup.
Anybody that's tried to access the web through a phone or, you know, Palm Pilot kind of thing or something like that starts to really realize the importance of being able to present it in alternative ways, to have it translate as it gets crammed through these tiny little screens and things like that, or in this case gets crammed through a printer. I printed off the IBM articles, and it was pleasant to see that all of the other muck on the page just sort of went away when I went to print it out.
We had nothing to do with that.
That's right.
It's nice nonetheless.
Well, that's good. And then I think the next one was
database. Abstraction Layer was the next in the series.
And was this the one where you unveiled the DB2 abstraction layer for?
Well, this is all pretty much down to Steve. Right? You can take the credit for this one.
Yeah, no, I don't want to take the credit. That's kind of a liability, I think.
Somebody
wrote it. You know, one of the things that we kind of, you know, as being inside of IBM is, you know, we have this database, and, you know, someone inside of IBM thinks that we should use it for things. And so we wanted to see, you know, as an exercise, well, let's see if we can get DB2 and Drupal to play nice together. And that's really what 9 is all about. And we do unveil kind of an initial implementation. There are a couple bugs, you know, overall, it wasn't a terrible process. It wasn't difficult. It was just, you know, splitting hairs. You know, do I do something this way? And, you know, what are the performance problems, or, you know, design development problems, or do it this other way? And maybe the code looks a little nicer, but, you know, I'm not really comfortable that it's going to be as portable or something. So, you know, it kind of, what's interesting, if you look at the Drupal, you know, DB layer, it's very, you know, MySQL oriented. You know, despite you know, Postgres being supported, there's still a lot of MySQLisms that you find in the external modules, right? You see things like the limit clause, which isn't standards compliant; it's MySQL compliant, and even the API is pretty closely bound to the MySQL PHP connector. And so there were a couple things that the DB2 PHP connector didn't have that we kind of had to work around. But you know, it was a fun experience.
I mean, again, that's an area that there hasn't been. I mean, we were talking on the last podcast about just sort of, to some extent, the number of feet that have been on a path directly relates to how well you will be able to travel that path in the future. And in terms of writing, sort of different database abstraction layers, there hasn't been it's not a well-worn path, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's always interesting and exciting to see when someone sort of goes down that sort of how it goes, and you know, and that hopefully, you know, that the whole community can benefit. And ultimately, I mean, a lot of times we find that when there are problems, that you find maybe the limit clause or whatever, that if there are solutions to that, then oftentimes those will get incorporated into Drupal core. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, the limit clause has just been, I mean, there's the query range function, and, you know, that's, for some reason, not a lot of people are, in our experience, you know, we've run into cases where it wasn't used properly and someone was embedding MySQL-specific queries into their module code, and that, yeah, that's kind of frustrating, especially, you know, even for the Postgres people, you know.
Yeah.
But it definitely, doing that article, it's kind of an eye-opener to realize how close Postgres and MySQL are, you know, track each other in the PHP world. And so really, if you look at Drupal now, you know, the DDL initialization stuff aside, if you just look at the API, it's really one database abstraction layer, right? It's PHP, MySQL, they're kind of joined together. And then, you know, if you look at the Oracle stuff or the DB2 stuff, which came out actually right about the same time, which is kind of interesting, you know, Oracle and DB2 are kind of their own separate implementations on top of the abstraction layer, right? So, you know, a good friend here at the office says, you know, you got to have three good implementations, independent implementations, before something you can start calling something an abstraction layer that makes sense.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's true. It's there. If people want to implement it, you will be contributing to being able to actually call it an abstraction layer.
So that's all that's up on the site as of today.
That gets us through chapter 9, which brings us up to today, right?
Yeah. And there's, like we said, there's two at the editors. One is the features that we needed to implement and consider for doing an extranet site. Because the original site that we actually built was an extranet.
But, I mean, just to elaborate on that, it was I think, a useful article to write. I mean, maybe not, you know, having a login page or session management or timeout and so forth, but the fact that we're showing how we adapted an existing module and taking maybe, you know, creating another module but going a little bit more... to get a little bit further than the announcement module, which I think was a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's definitely an article that shows that we'll work well with other people's code. We don't always want to go and blaze our own trail and create our own thing.
And I think we were more aware of the modules that are around and so forth. It's an evolution.
It's a funny thing. I mean, as you're writing these articles, you're learning more about sort of the Drupal ecosystem and stuff. And so do you get the feeling of wanting to go back and rewrite things? Or
Only if we're forced to. Right?
You actually, probably by the time you actually publish it, you're glad to just let it go.
It's still working by the time we publish it, and you know, we'll just let it keep running until it breaks.
And people can comment on it, so they can correct you. You can comment on it yourself under an assumed name.
That's right.
This is all changed now. So what else do you have on the horizon?
Well, there's an article that we had difficult writing on the taxonomy system.
Yes. Well, we periodically do like a listener voicemail kind of thing, and we've had several people call in and say, you know, can you explain taxonomy? And we usually start in and then end up editing it out and say, we'll just do it in another podcast. We'll just do a taxonomy-specific podcast because it's a huge thing. Yeah. At first you start into it thinking, I'll be able to explain this in a few sentences, and then like 3 hours later.
Right.
So yeah. How's that going?
We put a stake in the ground.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see or hear the comments from the community.
Yeah. That's out there. It was one of those articles, you know, when we write these things, when we read them, you know, we usually feel pretty good about them. We feel like we've covered something new or whatever. But when we were reading the taxonomy article after we wrote it, it was always missing that magic that I think our other articles had.
Well, I've got to say, I mean, just by the virtue of the fact that it exists, you're truly out ahead, because as someone that's attempted, it's...
Well, wait until you read it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pragmatic.
Yeah. The interesting thing about I don't know what it is about about Drupal taxonomy, but it just seems to be sort of a hot potato. You know, that it was written like several years ago. I want to say it's like 3 years ago or something like that. I wasn't involved with Drupal when it was written, but it was like 4.3 or 4.2 or something like that that the taxonomy stuff was written. Maybe. Before that, I don't know, and it hasn't changed one note. Like, I mean, there's been some minor things. There was free tagging added, and some nice things like that. You know, but conceptually, it was so far out ahead. And did way more than anyone could even imagine what they would do with it, that it hasn't changed. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but regardless, it's just been sort of a bit of a hot potato.
Yeah. Well, we kind of felt that, you know, there's the purist point of view of using a taxonomy, right? And but then when we started down that road, we realized that the solid use cases were running out fast, and we wanted to show other, you know, solid examples, and we I suppose what we came up with was a very pragmatic approach, using maybe taxonomies in ways which a purist might not want them to be used, but nevertheless they're examples, and maybe we'll, you know, get someone all fired up about using it in another way.
That's great. Get some conversation going around it, because
we're using it in the standard ways for navigation, for organization. We actually use it for styling. So we try to open people's eyes to what a taxonomy can do.
Yeah, we've done that. We've done that a lot. Yeah. The sort of triggering different style stuff based on taxonomy.
Yeah. Right.
So, it's good stuff.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see when it's published in. Whenever it's published. I don't even know what our publishing schedule looks like these days.
Yeah, I think there's...
Be ready when it's ready.
Yeah.
So then the next one is a hosting and deployment article.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting one, right? Because, you know, here we are. We're writing about deploying a Drupal site inside of IBM. And, I mean... only inside of IBM or any other large company. I mean, we just have a tremendous amount of resources that we can kind of throw at this. And so, you know, our hosting for our Drupal site is probably overkill, but, you know, it's nice to write about it. We actually used virtualization and virtual machines, and that's how we shipped our Drupal site around and configured it here in Cambridge and then shipped it to Yorktown, New York, and it's just been it's an interesting article to write and to read, but it's not necessarily Drupal specific. It's just, you know.
Right. But again, it might give people more ideas about the possibilities of considering your deployment when you're developing your site. And this, you know, was a nice way of doing it, where you can just package it up and not have to worry about installing it on a completely new system.
Right.
You know. So what was the next one?
Well, the next one's trying to look at the development cycle within Eclipse. There was a number of people that actually requested some information about that, and since we use it for almost everything, including CVS for code backup and writing the developer work articles themselves, we haven't outlined that article yet, but it seems like a productive area to look at.
So that's really cool. So you guys use Eclipse all for all the development stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, everything. PHP. I use it for Perl development as well. Java, C, all sorts of stuff. And all of our Drupal sites have been developed.
Are you feeling like it's mature with PHP? I mean, I've been using the Zend IDE, which is the Zend people are sort of synonymous with PHP, and so it's kind of the IDE, but Eclipse is catching up quickly, and it looks like the Zend is actually starting to put their efforts into developing a PHP IDE for Eclipse, and sort of starting to abandon their own IDE, but it's not quite there yet. Have you And feeling like that's...
I haven't had any problems with it. It's
And it's certainly a lot freer. I think the Zend IDE is like, I don't know, $350 or something like that. I sort of had to swallow deeply and say, oh, I'm going to use this every day, and it'll be, you know...
I've been far more productive than my normal, you know, command line VI, CBS or whatever. So it's helped me out quite a bit. I don't think I would have been as fast to develop some of the stuff for our site if I didn't have Eclipse, especially, you know, managing CBS and sharing code with these guys. It's just been, you know, just getting the whole development workflow and kind of the groove going on. You know, I think that's what Eclipse, you know, helped me do.
And that's one of the things that probably we would like to cover is the CVS integration in Eclipse, which obviously would be, I think, useful for the Drupal community since pulling down version 5 might be the next thing.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see, and definitely sort of to see it in context with Drupal development, because I know a lot of people out there, you know, start out with sort of whatever text editor they can find, and to get into a full IDE integrated development environment, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot more power there, and it's can be really
well from a designer perspective. If you are dealing with XML and CSS, you can get you know, like a Dreamweaver type environment within Eclipse as well. So,
I didn't realize that. Yeah, it has. I guess I've seen that there's like a browser, but sort of a preview area that kind of in the same way that the Dreamweaver does and stuff. But I haven't messed with that.
That's a part of the Web Tools platform. You can do JavaScript development in there as well. And I think in the newer version, they're actually going to allow you to embed Firefox or IE into the Eclipse preview window. So, you know, right now it's using like an Eclipse browser or something like that.
It's using its own, but it'll actually use the Gecko rendering engine or whatever.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, Eclipse is good stuff.
Yeah, and we used it freely. You know, IBM's a big sponsor of the Eclipse project and foundation, and we did the initial code donation, but we chose it freely. No one put a gun to us.
That's good to know.
Yeah, but if people out there, you know, I think, you know, Eclipse aside, I think having a good development tool chain is probably very important. You know, you shouldn't be using Notepad or something else. You should be using something with syntax highlighting and undo features, you know, undo and stuff.
Definitely. When I first started doing the development, I mean, the process was basically I'd make PHP change or something, and then I'd upload it to the server, FTP it up, and then I'd go and I'd see what the error was, what line it said the error was on. I'd go back to my editor and I'd find it and stuff. And it's like amazing to have one that like on the fly will tell you there's a syntax error in this line. That's a great time saver, especially when you're working on the live version of your site. Don't do that. Maybe it's just your blog or something.
Yeah.
So. But cool. Are other articles? Or are we?
That's pretty much it. There's a summary article typically with these series.
Right.
Maybe we'll probably talk about the future of Drupal.
Yeah.
Which we don't know anything about.
Well, you've been focusing so much on this stuff that you've been working on, so you haven't really had a chance to look at all the exciting new features in Drupal 5.
No, we have, and we're starting to look at.
You could do a whole new series.
We could, but it turns out that 14, 15 articles is kind of an endurance test. We're really burned out. I mean,
yeah. Well, anyone that's done any writing like that, I have immense respect for. My wife is an author, and Matt Westgate from Lullabot is writing a Drupal book right now, and it's just it's a lot more work than it looks. It takes longer to write it than it does to read it. Unless you're Stephen King, I guess, but I don't quite get that flow going.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much. I mean, it's for people that aren't familiar with this this IBM series of articles on Drupal. It's a huge, huge wealth of information. Really good, well thought out stuff, and it's to be appreciated. I appreciate it. So thanks a lot, guys.
And you'll put a link to the article?
We will put a link. It has a relatively obscure URL. I was telling these guys before that you should use Drupal for the developer works site, and then you could give it whatever URL you would like.
That's right.
But, you know, we'll get there eventually. Yep. We will conquer the world eventually. God, the cult of Drupal. What have I become that I'm that guy? But, yeah.
Well, we've enjoyed it.
Yeah. After 14 articles, you guys are that guy, too. So.
Yeah. The cult is working for us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks a lot, guys, and thanks for sitting down and talking with me for the podcast.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.